Kia ora, Wellington. It's B-Side Stories, stories of the people who make Wellington tick. This is Wellington Access Radio 106.1 FM. I'm your host today. My name's Laura. I'm joined in the studio by a future host of B-Side Stories. Victoria is joining me.
Kia ora.
Kia ora. She might chime in with a question or two, but mostly it'll be me running the desk today. And our guest this week, on Tuesday, the 20th of February, our guest is our newest city councillor in Wellington. You might know that Jordy Rogers was elected to represent the Pukehinau-Lambton ward during the February 2024 by-election, but you might not know much about Jordy and his background. So today we have a chance to talk to him about the campaign, about his interests, including advocating for renters' rights, and about his first impressions of Wellington City Council. So welcome to B-Side Stories.
Kia ora, thank you very much for having me.
I'm going to make sure your mic is on and let you say hello again.
Kia ora, thank you very much for having me.
Thanks, Jordy. So to start off, I'll give you a chance to give an intro of using your mihi-mihi, and then I'll launch into some questions about the campaign and everything you've experienced over the past few months of whirling into politics. But just to introduce yourself first.
Yeah, of course. Well, thank you very much, everyone. Tēnā koutou katoa. Nō kōtiri ana me Engari me Airana oku tipuna. Ko Munro me Mackenzie toku iwi. Ko Fern Glen toku waka. E noho ana au ki te Whanganui a Tara ki Island Bay. Te whenua o Taranaki whānui ki te upoka o te Ika. Ko Jordy Rogers taku ingoa. Ko tēnei taku mihi ki ngā tangata whenua. O te rohi nei, ka mihi hoki au ki ngā tohu o te rohi nei. Nō reira, tēnā koutou katoa. My name is Jordy Rogers. My family originally come from Scotland, Ireland, England, and the closest thing I guess I have to iwi would be my grandmother's clans, which were Mackenzie and Munro. Ironically, you know, someone back there came together when those two clans were actually at war with each other. And then eventually they came over here on a ship called the Fern Glen back in the 1870s. But yeah, I'm here now in Wellington, currently living in Island Bay, just about to move into Kelburn, just around the corner from the cable car. So I'll be an avid cable car user very soon. But yeah, very glad to be here and very glad to also be representing what I think is the best ward in the city.
Choice.
Yeah, well, you won't get any disagreement from me. I've lived in that ward for nearly 40 years, so.
That's brilliant. I also am living in Lambton Ward, so we're all big Lambton Ward fans in this studio today. So I wanted to ask, before we learn more about you as a person, I wanted to ask about this campaign, which is fresh in your mind, because it was quite an interesting and exciting one. But I guess just to start off with that process, how did you decide that you were going to run for city council?
It was really because someone came up to me and said, you know, you've been doing all these things for renters. We're losing one renter on the council, and there are very few on the council. It would be good to have someone who's continuing to advocate for renters in Aotearoa, in the ward in which I believe there are the most renters across the entire city. And maybe even across the country. So it is really important that people who are renting, who might never own a home or might not want to, also have their perspectives heard on the council. So it was kind of when someone presented that opportunity to me and said, here's the ways that you could continue some of your advocacy, it really was kind of a no-brainer. It felt like the natural next thing to do.
Mm-hmm. Now, Cordy, you ran on a ticket. And what did I mean? I know what does that mean? You when you run on a ticket?
Yeah, so I ran on the Green Party ticket. For me, it was really establishing what my values were. It made it easy to communicate to people. These are the things that I actually stand for, which is putting the people and the planet above everything else to make sure that we can live enduring and prosperous lives in the city, but also recognizing that we're interconnected with nature, and that means the broader country, the broader world that we live in. And that's really why I went with the Green Party. It's the one that's closest to my values. I think someone once said politics is like a bus. You get on the one that's like going the closest to your destination, and you kind of shape that a little bit with your own personality as you go, which I think I have been doing. But yeah, it really was about establishing what my values were, because it's really good when you can communicate that in two words, Green Party, as opposed to having to say everything that the Green Party is about and how it relates to all the values that I hold and have been raised with.
What was it like campaigning?
It was really interesting, actually. When we first went into it, we thought we've just come out of a general election. Everyone's going to be exhausted. No one wants to be involved. No one wants to talk about politics. But we actually found it was the opposite. People had just seen that, especially in the Wellington context, massive change had just happened. We had just elected Green Party candidates into Parliament as our local MPs, and people were thinking about all of the possibilities that that enabled. And it was also during a time when there were lots of things that could happen on council too. It felt like, and it certainly has resonated, that it's a difficult time for the council at the moment, and a lot of the decisions that might feel small at the moment will have ramifications for the next 10, 20 years. And so it was really important to people that not only was the person that they wanted sitting on council, but that they were able to engage with us as a campaign and tell us what was most important to them as well. So it really did surprise us. We thought it was going to be going out and talking to people who have far better things to do over summer, but people really were interested.
Have you done that kind of thing before? Have you put yourself out there as a candidate to be elected for something?
Not as a candidate, no. Usually, yeah. It's been cause first, and like, so a lot of my experiences with Renters United, and that's, you know, I guess the closest thing I come to putting myself out there is saying I am a renter. I don't really like say do this thing for Geordie. It's more do this thing for renters. And I think that did sort of tend to go well with the campaign as well, because I was in this mindset of vote for a cause rather than for an individual. There is some aspects of that where, you know, you would forget to say your name or anything like that. Like when I was doing door knocking, it was quite different for me to be like, oh yeah, also I'm Geordie Rogers and I am the candidate and I came and talked to you. Because it is just the way that I sort of think about these things. It is around, okay, who are the people that I'm door knocking? What are the things that they want? What are the things that I'm able to do for them? So I think that was an interesting difference, running on something that was, I guess, my name as opposed to an organisation.
And what kind of people would you meet? What kind of insights did you have from that experience of going door to door, putting yourself out there?
Yeah, it was, I guess the first one was that people wanted to talk to you. I guess I am someone who doesn't really enjoy door knockers coming that often, but people were really engaged. And I think especially with the change in government in a city that I guess perhaps tends to lean towards more of my values, we have more of those values in common. People were really worried about what some of that change meant. And for some of them, making sure that they were able to communicate about what their values actually were, regardless of what the election was that just happened, was sort of demonstrating people might have voted for. They wanted those values to continue to be in the council. They wanted more progress on active and public transport. They wanted to be moving towards a city that was zero waste, zero carbon. And people really were concerned about our natural taonga, like our water, and the environment around us as well. So every single conversation I had was kind of cementing, wow, people really do care about these things, after it felt like not many people cared about them anymore. And I think that was both rewarding, but also, very encouraging.
Cool. The results of the by-election were really close. And in fact, another person running for council, Carl Treffenbacher, he was declared the provisional winner before the special votes had been counted. So what was that like for you when that finally tipped into like winning by 45 votes, something like this, and the election was so close and you were kind of edging with those special votes towards a victory?
Yeah, it certainly felt like going through all of the emotions possible in a 3-day span. Yeah. Like when I got the results, the everyone that had sort of helped out on the campaign was there, and trying to communicate to them that the results that came through on the day initially looked like it wasn't going to be the result that we were campaigning for. And I think that was hard for a lot of us, not just myself as the candidate, but a lot of people who had been having really good conversations and had been talking to people. I mean, campaigning isn't easy. It's connecting yourself to an identity, a thing that you want to achieve. And so when it kind of feels like it's coming crumbling down like that, it can be really difficult. When it kind of got to that first sort of result where all of the onto the day votes came through, that for us was kind of like, actually, this is the campaign working. A lot of the people that we were communicating with were people who might have moved between addresses recently, or people who needed quite a few reminders to get to the poll. And a lot of that did come through on the day. And some of that was our volunteers being incredibly dedicated on the Thursday and Friday and going out and door knocking on every door that we could just to say, are you aware there's an election on? At that point, not trying to convince people, but just trying to make sure that people got their voice heard. And I think the effort of all of those people involved really did ultimately lead to that turnaround on Wednesday. And that was a massive relief. It was incredible to know that all of that work had paid off for something. But I think also in the moment, acknowledging that someone else thought that they were in a position that they had won, and then we're getting obviously the opposite result. So to know what that feels like, having just experienced it sort of 3 days prior, it was incredibly weird. But ultimately, it's been incredibly rewarding, I think, to be able to go back to those communities and say, look, we've been here for a couple of weeks and we're already acting on many of the things that we campaigned on. Mm-hmm. So that feels really special.
And what does that really close result, how does it make you feel about representing the community in Lambton Ward?
I think it certainly encourages me to work with people more. There are a group of people who didn't vote for me, and I think it's really important that I speak to them about what my values were, the values that I'm representing with the people who did vote for me, but also understand the issues that they're facing and why they voted for someone else. When we do get elected and we sort of sign our declaration, we are signing away sort of the people that voted us in, and more importantly, talking about the entire city as a whole and trying to do what is best for everyone as a whole. And so especially like through this long-term plan process where it's, I might have particular values that ring true to me, I still need to be really open and honest with people about wanting to hear their feedback, because it is really important that we're doing what people want continuously, not just on the day of the vote, but throughout the entire term. It's certainly not something that I'm thinking, oh, I won, don't have to think about the people ever again. It's at the forefront every single day, and I think the result wouldn't necessarily have changed that, but it has helped cement that in.
Yeah. Let's learn a little bit more about you and your background. You're from Ashurst, born in Ashurst.
Sure was. Well, I guess technically Palmerston North, if you looked on my passport.
Sorry, born, yes, yeah.
but lived in Ashurst, which is just 15 minutes out of there.
Yeah. Yep. And did you have like a political upbringing, would you say?
I think, I guess compared to what I think of a political upbringing looking like now, I don't think I did. But I think my parents were incredibly attuned to political issues, and a lot of the conversations that we had around the dinner table, I guess, were quite hardy conversations. Both of my parents were scientists, or still are scientists, and I think in terms of the conversations that they naturally gravitate towards, they are ones that are challenging and inquisitive, and really try to break issues down. And so I think I had a lot of that through my upbringing, and that ultimately led me sort of like into the engineering space of trying to figure out why things work the way they do, or why we make decisions to do things a certain way, and really trying to break things down into their components. I guess what I've learned since being raised is that every decision is political. Politics is this way of negotiating our different values. It kind of comes out in like these cost-benefit analysis, right? Like this is a tool that gets used a lot in sort of public policy making, but underlying all of those things is ultimately someone who put a value on someone's life or put a value on someone's house. And those things, I think, are inherently political. And even research, the person who's writing it doesn't come from an entirely different point of view and abstract their entire politics from it. But even through that, there is politics or values embedded in it. And ultimately, it is our decision as sort of decision makers to try and unpick some of those values and think, okay, do those values actually align with the values of the community? Are those the things that are most important to people? And so I guess looking back on it, yes, it was political, but I guess the ultimate conclusion is that every upbringing is political in some way.
So were you like a campaigner kid? Were you out there striking for climate and running for school council and things like this?
I think the first thing I ever got involved in was the local alcohol policy bylaw in Palmerston North. And I ironically say that it's it kind of reinforced me just how slow things happen in politics. It wasn't until I think I finished, so I did that maybe year 12, and then when I finished university, it still hadn't been accepted. It was still sort of being debated about what should go in and what shouldn't. So I guess that was the first political thing I did, sort of like out on the streets campaigning, not that much actually.
So your local body education started when you were still at school?
Yeah, I would say in terms of understanding what local politics is, it's very much started at school. But I think that was, I guess, driven by many of the friends that I kept as well. A lot of them were a bit more political and interested in those things than I was. And I was kind of the kid that just signed up to everything a little bit. That's I guess where it all started.
Cool. You came to Wellington in 2017.
Yep.
You were studying computer science, I started off with engineering
and engineering? I was so determined to do my fourth year. Like so many of my friends dropped out and didn't do the fourth year and graduated with a computer science. But I thought, you know what, I'll stick to it. I'll do the fourth year. I'll get the engineering degree. And then, of course, the pandemic happened. And for me, I felt like really disconnected from a lot of my friends through studying. Mm-hmm. And an opportunity came up at a nonprofit where I could help people still in the tech center with Summer of Tech and try and get people who were studying into tech roles. It was how I got my first internship, and I really wanted to pay that forward. I had been in a small way of like helping people check into events, but this was the first time where I could come in as the program manager for Wellington and try and design some of those courses about what we're teaching students for free so they can get internships at the end of the year. Because we find while universities are really good at teaching students the underlying concepts of programming and computing, they aren't as good at keeping up with what's currently being used in the industry. And so it was kind of bridging the gap between learning and earning is the saying that was there. And I think in my time there, we helped close to 700 students get internships, which was pretty awesome to be able to say that you did that at the end of the day.
Cool. So what kind of engineering were you focused on?
So it was software engineering. It wasn't too much of a change to go to computer science.
Yeah.
The fourth year is like where you do your own projects, so a lot of the work becomes more sort of self-isolated and academic. And what I really wanted was to do something that was making an impact. The job that I had at the time, I felt like a little bit disconnected from the product that was getting delivered. It was, you know, making very technical software for a team that made software for a company that sold that software to another company, you know, that then eventually provided communication services like the phones that we use in New Zealand, the way that we can call each other. And so, yeah, I really wanted to do something where it was at the heart of actually connecting with people and changing people's lives.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Do you still use your tech and computer science interests?
I would say I certainly do.
Do you work outside of being a counsellor?
I don't. I guess it depends whether you call like all the other volunteer stuff as work or
every
not.
Every other project, side project, yeah.
Yeah.
It's work. It's just not paid.
Yeah,
exactly. Yeah, that's exactly it. It's kind of interesting. Like one of the things that I think I learned being involved in the activism space and the tech space is a lot of people who are at university and studying tech understand that there's a lot of injustice that happens and they want to resolve that in a way. And so there's a lot of ideas kind of in the startup scene that are created, but quite often what doesn't happen is that communication with the people who are actually facing the injustice. And so we get a lot of technological ideas that from a tech sense is really cool, it's innovative, it uses new technology, but it does so in a way that doesn't solve that person's problem. And so that's one of the places that has entirely captivated me. And it was the thing that I told myself, if I didn't win the by-election, I was still going to be committed to people and would look more in that sort of space. And I think perhaps as time goes on, maybe that's where I want to put my effort in 6-9 years.
It's actually interesting, Jody, as you're talking, I'm thinking, well, that's a bit like what a lot of people's relationship to council is.
Yes.
Is that there are people at council that you know are doing work, they're paid, they're employed, they're doing projects, and you're a resident in the Lambton ward and there's an issue that concerns you, but you don't really know how to connect the issue that concerns you with the people who might have some ability to help you with that issue. So it sounds to me like you're actually doing the same thing.
Yeah, I guess it really is. I mean, the great example, I guess, is the long-term plan. I think the way that I describe it is it's the most influential document that a council will ever pass in its tenure. It has effects on everyone's lives, not just people living here now, but people who will live here in 10 years. And for some of our infrastructure plans, that's, you know, even further out, that's sort of 30 years from now. And it is, I would say, for an individual, impossible to navigate. I think that is for, you know, all of the people who work at council, all the people who live in Wellington, and all the people who are serving as your councillors. I don't think any one of them understands every line item and can explain it to you. But I think as elected members, as councillors, our job is to help people navigate that and find the people who do have those skills, create relationships between people who have a problem and people who are working on the solution. I kind of dived into that from day one. I remembered going to a protest about city safety, and this was particularly around sexual violence in the city. And I hadn't heard much about it, but I knew that a lot of the people that I knew were still experiencing things like that in the city. And so it's been connecting with people, hearing about how that project's going on, who's working on it, where it sits in council. And I found that quite rewarding, knowing that you are at least pushing something forward, you're keeping things moving, and things aren't sort of getting lost, I guess, in this massive well of knowledge and massive list of projects.
Yeah, you've had a chance already in your first few weeks, going on 2 months at council, to get into some really chunky kind of policies and stuff, so that's quite exciting. I wanted to ask about a Renters United, about that renter advocacy aspect of your background. How did you get involved in that space?
Yeah, it was through pretty much every way that everyone gets involved in Renters United, and it's by having a horrible renting experience. I had a couple back-to-back. I had a flat that had a hole in the wall. The landlord replaced the carpet that the hole was leaking water onto, but didn't replace the hole. And then when mold started growing on the new carpet, they, for some reason, thought the smell also reminded them of marijuana, and so they accused us of using drugs in the house and wanted to remove us from the property for that reason. We ended up moving on anyway because it wasn't the nicest property. And then I had an unfortunate breakup with my partner at the time. Thought I would go to the tribunal, which was supposed to be this, you know, impartial person that helped decide what was within and what was without, outside of the law. And then actually found the person who was the most hostile to me in the room, out of me, the landlord, and the adjudicator, was the adjudicator. Mm. And so it was kind of this realization that this entire system that is set up in theory to protect all parties involved didn't really, and it was incredibly difficult to engage with. I mean, you had to pay a fee, and then you had to wait some time, and you had to go into the district court when really all you needed was a conversation. And from there, it was just kind of figuring out, okay, there's more and more barriers to actually being able to have a good life as a renter. So I went along to a Renters United meeting, and I guess the rest just went from there. It was one step to the next, trying to figure out what we could actually do to solve some of these issues.
Mm-hmm.
It started off, I guess, from my software background, doing membership database stuff. I feel like many people start at that sort of like, I was just entering some data into a form, and then, you know, the next day I'm for some reason running an organization.
Yeah.
I guess looking back on it, it pretty much did feel like that at the time.
Yeah.
Yeah, it was just from 0 to 100. Because, I mean, a lot of those community organizations, you know, it's like if someone has the time to do something, you are an infinitely valuable resource, because the thing that they will never be able to access is money. The only thing they can access is time. And so as soon as they do get their hands on someone's time, not through any particular ill means, but it's just, you know, the organization just really needs it. It's hard to put the work down. It's incredibly riveting. It's rewarding. And, you know, it's one of those things where you think, if we weren't doing this work, what would be happening instead? The mm-hmm. the counterfactual is hard to rest with, I think.
Do you think that Renters United has made a difference in Wellington?
Yeah, I certainly think it does. I think it made a lot of progress towards the healthy home standards, which when they came in, there was a lot of opposition to. And now, you know, we've just seen a government repeal a large list of things that the previous government did. And some renters stuff was on there, but healthy home standards weren't. And it seems like no one would really touch them, except for maybe to make them better. Or at least I'm hoping someone wants to make them better. There are other things, I mean, like around 90-day no-cause evictions, which are horrific and I think entirely unjustified. But, yeah, I mean, I think Renters United has made a difference. One of the things that I guess we're good at as an organisation is having people who are just available, who have reasonably flexible schedules to answer a phone call from the media. A lot of the way that the media works is just by talking to the first person to pick up the phone and give them a comment. It's not necessarily the person who has the most knowledge. It's not necessarily the person who has the most formed opinion. It's just the person who's available. And I mean, we're seeing the effects of that on the media industry at the moment. Mm. But yeah, I think having an organisation that is actively advocating for renters and is establishing renting, I think, as well as an identity in New Zealand rather than just something that you progress through, I think has been incredibly helpful for Wellington.
How did that involvement in that organisation, I'm not sure, was it concurrent with your university or after? How did that kind of lead you, or what do you think it gave to you that sort of prepared you for what you're doing now?
I think it did, I guess, perhaps contribute to steering me away from the course of a specifically software engineering degree. I think, like, when I look back at it, I think, you know, programming for me feels like a way to get out of the human aspect. But then the more I learned about these issues, the more I realized actually it's not. And just trying to avoid political conversations or avoid talking about the way that we should design things wasn't actually helpful and was just further embedding the inequalities that we already had. So I think the fact that Renters United existed and I was able to go along and also recognize how interconnected a lot of these issues were definitely steered me towards, I guess, a career where I'm actively trying to influence the way that we do things at a incredibly broad and at a scale that touches, you know, thousands of people, rather than trying to, I guess, purely advocate from the outside in. Actually getting on board on the inside and saying, these are my values, these are things I want to push, and continue to then connect out to those communities that put you there. Yeah, so I think it definitely changed my career, like, trajectory.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And were you going to university at the same time as you were starting to get involved in those causes you cared about?
I was, yeah. I was the person who signed up to do everything at high school, and I was the person who signed up to do everything at university, and so it did very much continue. I think I'd like to think that I've gotten to a place now where I understand how many things I can say yes to, and it is a bit healthier than when I was at university or high school. But yeah, there were a lot of things running in parallel, and it's kind of, you know, some of those things where you pick them up for a month and then they kind of go away. But Renters United seemed to be the one thing that persisted alongside university. It didn't fall away. It was impossible to put down. Yeah.
I think another cause that I read about your involvement was the living wage movement. Did you have some?
I'd been a strong supporter of the living wage movement.
Yeah.
Some of the things that I hadn't become interested in were workers' rights. And I think an interesting thing is, you know, quite a lot of the time in New Zealand, we mostly see union involvement at a level where people really are on the edge, where you're talking about some of the most horrific abuses of a labour workforce. But the conversation doesn't really happen at the sort of professional IT level. And the thing that I guess concerned me at that point was that through learning about how so many things are interconnected. Even if we are not unionized because we have high pay and reasonably good conditions, the work that we're doing, whether it's working with things like AI or automation, does have an impact on those people who are heavily unionized and are really at the face of becoming unemployed through the work that we are doing. And for me, that's kind of why I joined the Aotearoa Tech Union, was that space of trying to help people realize that actually we did have to think more consciously about the work that we were doing. And in order to assert our values through the work that we were doing, that was going to require more than just one person saying it. It was going to have to require a bit more collective action. And so I guess that's how I got connected into supporting living wage. It's, for me, I guess, a very simple ask that's really easy to communicate as well, which from a campaigning perspective is something that happens quite rarely. And so, yeah, that was really interesting to me.
Well, I know a lot of work's been done over the years with the City Council, who for some time was not paying a living wage, or rather had subcontractors who were not paying living wages. And that has changed largely, I think, because of various city councillors pointing out that this was a major injustice.
Yeah, I mean, one of the things that I said during the campaign is I do really believe that we can't run a city paying people an amount that means they can't afford to live in the city that they're building. Like, the idea that someone is constructing roads in Wellington or fixing our pipes but can't live in the city because it's too expensive or because they're not earning enough, I think is an incredibly bad look. They absolutely deserve to be able to sort of bear the fruits that they've put so much hard work into. It's, I think, entirely reasonable that as a community, we collectively are saying anyone who works in the city deserves to be able to live in the city too. They shouldn't have to commute for an hour a day.
Well, it's very early days yet, so you know, you haven't experienced a lot of pushback yet, although I suspect that you may well experience pushback, because it seems to be one of the frequent things that comes up when you're talking about councils is, oh, you know, the rates are so high, and you know, they are, but it's also the rates pay for things, and it's getting people to understand what it is that they pay for.
Yeah, it's one that I've had to come to terms with. I mean, because 16%, I think, is where we're roughly getting to with the current long-term plan, is a large increase from where we are now. But it is looking around, okay, what does it actually cost to deliver the resources that we already have in the city? And that alone is a massive rates increase. We've been very careful around, you know, where are we actually adding additional services, many services that people want to see the council providing. And we've had to balance both the concerns around how much rates should be and how many services we deliver. We've had to be quite strict on that. And I think people who do have an opinion on it should definitely submit on the long-term plan. They've got until the 12th of May, a little plug there. But one of the things that I think is incredibly difficult as well is we've spent a long time charging rates at a lower cost than what it realistically is to run a city. And we're starting to get back to the point where we're charging rates at an amount that is what it costs to run the city. And I think that's incredibly confronting, because it always feels like surely there must be a little bit of waste that we can squeeze out. And, you know, we've been squeezing waste out of councils for a very long period of time now, to the point where, you know, waste at some points was labelled, you know, depreciation on our water assets. And that's helped contribute to get us to where we are today. Some of those sort of cost-saving measures. I will acknowledge it's incredibly difficult, but councils do have to deliver about a third of the infrastructure in New Zealand, but they have nowhere near the mechanisms that council does to be able to actually recoup that cost of delivering the infrastructure. It basically just has to come through rates, and that's a very blunt tool, I guess.
Do you have any theories about why this is so? Do you think people are afraid, or councillors are afraid, if they tell the public just how expensive it is to run a city, they'll never get elected?
Yep. I mean, there were certainly attitudes for many years gone by. It was incredibly popular to be elected on a platform of squeezing waste out of the council. And I think one of the things that I've tried to come into it with is I try to think about my role as governing up. I think my role is not to take the community's input and feedback and purely project that down onto the organisation, but rather set the direction for it. I think when I look back over the last sort of 50, 60 years of councils, a lot of it has been really sort of introspective, sort of management focused. Okay, where can we pull out these little bits and pieces? But I really do think that if we take the values that Wellingtonians have and we take the ideas that they have and put that towards a future-focused plan, the people who are really good at figuring out which things we prioritise and where we sort of slot them in terms of budget lines will be able to do that. And that will give us more time to engage in the community and actually get feedback from people instead of, I guess, what we have now, which is we were trying to scrutinise every single line that goes through. And that doesn't give us much time to sort of actually go out and talk to the community and think about the future that we want more than just sort of the next week, the next month. So yeah, really trying to bring that future focused, especially around the 30 to 50 year timeline, because when you sort of look back in history, a lot of it has been limited to 10 years. And yeah, that sort of gets to us where we are now.
And how's your visionary governing up going at City Council so far? You've just started off in your role. How's it going?
I think the beautiful thing is that one of the first things I got to vote on was the district plan, and that's inherently future-focused, incredibly visionary, and I mean, I think Chris Bishop's a little late getting back to us on his decisions on the district plan. My watch would say it's past mid-April, but that was really thinking about, okay, what future are we creating? And I think one of the things that I've really noticed through every decision that we make is that it is going to take a lot of work to get people around the table thinking about, okay, what does the thing that we're voting on now look like in 30 years? Because we spend a lot of time sort of going to the community and asking them, how will this impact your day-to-day life if we implement it now? A good example of that is the Berrinpora Newtown parking scheme, which seems a bit overdone if you were thinking about what Newtown is today. But if you think about what it enables us to do progressively over time for the next 20 years as Newtown changes, as the sort of the collection of people who are visiting, staying, living in Newtown changes, it gives us far more flexibility than what we have now. And I think that's kind of where a lot of this contention comes in council, is through that future and present focus. So I guess I'm, in conclusion, I'm saying it's not easy. It's a difficult challenge, and I think it's one that will happen not over one conversation, but over thousands. And so you're really trying to make sure that every single conversation I am talking about future and vision focus, and really trying to drive that through for both all of us as elected members, but also all of the staff and the community that I'm talking to about what is the actual future that you want. We can solve all your problems. If we could just wave a magic wand and do that, what would the future look like? And everyone has a different answer.
Hmm. Has being on council been like you expected?
Yeah, I think it has. But I would sort of put a little footnote on that and say what I expected council to be perhaps isn't what everyone expects council to be. I think, I'd engaged with council before in the past, and I think it's really easy to look at council and assume it's dysfunctional, that nothing gets done, that there's lots of infighting. But while there are certainly times where I think people do engage in bad faith, I think in the majority, everyone who is there is working towards delivering for Wellingtonians. And I think that's the bit that kind of gets missed out, is there are these bits where we all sit in a room and there is some collaboration. There are people who can agree on things. It is really rewarding, I think. And I think the thing that I have really enjoyed as someone who likes to constantly be engaged is that there is never a dull moment. There is always more work to pick up. There's always more work to be done. And I think many councillors come with that mindset as well, about wanting to pick up more work, want to get lots of things solved. And I found a lot of connection with other councillors on that. So
tell me about that. Have you made it some good friends and found some good support there?
Yeah, I mean, like, I wouldn't call Ray Chung a political alliance of mine, but He is entirely dedicated to delivering for constituents. Like, he probably receives more emails than anyone on council. He probably spends more time talking than anyone on council. But I think it does show he is incredibly passionate about engaging with his community, and I think he does that really well. And he does bring that to the table in a somewhat unapologetic manner, and I think that's something that I can definitely respect. There's definitely other people as well who spend a lot of time talking to their colleagues, spend a lot of time planning, are really open about reaching across the aisle. That's been fantastic. But a lot of it really is, like, I guess when you start a new job and you sort of get into the, we have like a counsellor's lounge, and, you know, it's like your first day in the cafeteria and you don't really know who's going to come up and talk to you. But everyone there is most of the time quite nice. Lots of good stories. I mean, many of the people who are there are older than I am. They have lots of life experience, and I love getting to hear about it as well. I think it's incredible all of these different lives that people have lived and brought to council, and the different perspectives that gives them around the decisions that they make as well. And I think listening to those, even in a non-political sort of just getting to know each other way, does help me understand how I make my decisions and what I might prioritise.
Are you expected to be the youth voice on the council now?
I'm still not the youngest on council.
Still not the youngest.
I believe Councillor Wieneta is maybe a month or so younger than I am. I think there is some expectation that I am the youth voice, and I must admit I'm not the most youthful person in terms of my age. I certainly do think the thing that I share with a lot of youth is thinking about their future and the future of their children. And I think that comes down to, you know, a lot of the talk around climate crisis and a lot of those, you know, 30 to 50 year issues. So I like to think that's the way that I'm bringing my youth lens. But also, I guess one of the things that commonly comes up as well is, like, and it parallels with renters. There's this conversation at the moment that students are inherently less valuable in our community. And it was a conversation that still somewhat happens with renters, where renters are less valuable in a community. And so I'd like to think that, having been one recently, I can help push back on some of those narratives and say, actually, these people live here, they pay rates, they work here, they're educating themselves here, which in itself should be congratulated. Like, being able to educate yourself in this current economic environment is incredibly challenging. And a lot of those students are working one or two or three jobs to be able to put themselves through it. So I think they contribute a lot, and hopefully they feel like having me there represents their voice a little bit more than it would have been.
Would you recommend to a young person in university, maybe with some interests in political causes, to go down the track of elected office?
I think certainly, yeah. I think quite a lot of the time we hold people to elected office kind of on a pedestal, but ultimately it is someone who's there as a decision maker, someone who's there to communicate things. And I think that those are all values that people should try and bring on to themselves, is being able to communicate your position in a respectful way. And so I think it would be a perfect role for young people. I don't really know what I want to do in 9 years' time. And in some ways, like, I have these moments where I'm like, oh my gosh, is standing for council totally ruined my perspectives for having a career? Like, what am I going to do? Who's going to want to employ someone who used to be a city councillor? Sometimes that comes into my head. But I, you know, everyone's like, don't think about it. It's a great job. You pick up a lot of skills. You spend most of your time dealing with conflict and conflict resolution, not in like a scary way, but in a way that makes you prepared to really achieve anything in the world, I think. And so I would entirely encourage anyone, regardless, well, I guess you have to legally be 18. Wish it was 16, but legally you have to be 18.
That's a different cause.
Yeah, to stand up and sort of stand up for your community. Because ultimately, like, 18-year-olds, also voters, also deserve to be represented. Students, whether they live here for 3 years or not, there will always be a body of students who need to be represented. There will always be a body of young people. So it's important that their voice is heard, and the best way to do that is by being a young person or being a student on council.
You've already done this, but I heard you hitting the key messages for your long-term plan consultation. Do you want to plug how people can find out more and get involved in Wellington City Council's consultation processes, especially the long-term plan right now?
Yeah, so like I said earlier, it's open until the 12th of May. And the thing that I think is good about the long-term plan is you can go as shallow or as deep as you would like. If you want to go line by line, you definitely can. But if you want to just go across the three main proposals, you can do that as well.
Well, you've inspired me. So how do I comment on the long-term plan?
Yeah, so the council, either going through to the council website, if that's one that you know familiar that you're familiar with, or if you have a search that you like to use, you can search Wellington City Council long-term plan. There's a website there that is interactive. It allows you to look at the different proposals across water, waste and insurance.
So if I don't have an opinion on everything, I could just give my views on a part of it and that would still be okay?
Yep, you certainly can. And so you can either use the submission forms that are provided, or if you don't want to do that, there's an email address there as well. So you can just email and, like, even if it's just two sentences, like, hey, I just wanted to say this particular thing I have a really unique interest in and I want this to be considered in the long-term plan. It might be something specific to your street. It might be speed bumps. A lot of people like speed bumps, I've discovered. Well, at least a lot of people have opinions on them.
So even if I wrote just like a bit of a rant, someone's going to read it?
Someone is going to read it, yep. And I would say if you really want to make sure that your submission is considered by the council, make sure you ask to submit in person. That can sound really daunting, you know, sort of sitting in a room and, pardon me, in front of a whole bunch of councillors, but definitely sign up to it. And if you're getting stressed towards the time, just flick me an email and I can support you through that process as someone who has done many public submissions. But it is the best way to communicate to councillors, but also an opportunity for us as councillors to ask you questions about your submission. So I'd definitely recommend asking to make a submission in person on top of your written submission.
That's a big volunteer there, Geordie, to say you help people out if they want to make a submission.
Yeah, I mean, I will be looking to organise sort of like a face-to-face time where you can come and I can help you make a submission as well, and we'll do that as a group. The other thing I was going to say is if you can't or don't like using the internet, you can also head on down to your local library. They have all of the information there in a physical form for you to digest, and someone should be able to help you get access to more information if you need it as well, just for those people who prefer not to use the internet or might just live next to a library and it might just be easy to pop in and ask questions rather than try and find it on the internet. But it is the most significant document the council will produce in 10 years. Really encourage you, whatever your views are, whatever you're thinking about, whatever's top of mind, just get a couple of sentences in there. And if you want to add more later down the track, you can just keep emailing until the 12th of May, and that's when the submissions close.
My last question for you, Geordie, in the last few minutes is, as someone who tends to say yes to everything, do you have any odd hobbies that might be fun to hear about? You're on the social handball team or the Sea Shanty Society. You're out there doing some basket weaving. Anything on the side projects?
I did triathlon, so I did a couple of half Ironmans. There was a period where I fundraised for the Burnett Foundation, and so for every $100 donation I got, I ran a half marathon, which was probably one of the worst decisions in my life.
That's a lot.
and I tried to do it. I think I did 5 in 1 month, which was far too many. But I think the most interesting thing perhaps is that I seem to have a lot of knowledge, but none of which ever becomes useful in a quiz. And I think that's probably the most defining thing about me. If you spent, you know, an hour or two with me, there would just be random little bits of knowledge and you'll be like, why would anyone ever need to know that? And for some reason I know that. I've watched a YouTube video or something. But it would never come up in a quiz and it would probably never be useful to me. But it's knowledge.
So you're saying you're no good on a pub quiz team?
I'm terrible on a pub quiz team.
That's unfortunate.
Yeah. Just know lots of stuff that's not useful at all.
But sounds like you need to be a quiz master. That's what you need.
That is true. That might be the next avenue.
Jordy Rogers, our newest city councillor.
Thank you very much.
Thank you for being here.
That program was brought to you by Wellington Access Radio. Get your voice heard. Thanks New Zealand On Air for funding accessmedia.nz.